Stock Eliminator to the lanes. We need Stock Eliminator to the lanes.
Welcome, everybody, to the Class Racing Podcast with Aaron and Chuck. Introducing your host, RaceToolsDirect.com's own Aaron Allison and the Cobra Jet flying Charlie Downing, better known as Chuck.
This podcast is proudly presented by Race Tools Direct, your source for all of your racing tools and equipment needs. Visit racetoolsdirect.com or call 440-941-8533 to order today. With the recent Trump tariffs that have gone into effect, there is no better time to buy a lift or other piece of equipment for your shop, as industry prices are going up by as much as 15% in the next week. Race Tools Direct has 2- and 4-post lifts starting as low as $1,649.95. Stop laying on the ground and make working on your car fun again. Visit the website or give us a call today to talk about your options.
Welcome to the Class Racing Podcast, episode number 11. Charlie, what's going on, man?
Paul, he's here in Michigan, watching it rain another day for the 20th consecutive day, I think. So, just cutting grass and thinking about going racing again here after Norwalk this week.
Now, I do want to apologize. We took a few weeks off here. Charlie got had the spring break blues.
Yeah, and, that's my fault 100%. I'm not going to lie. I'm getting a little lazy there the last month.
Nah, but you had a bunch going on. You traveled for work. I had traveled for work a little bit. And, you know, we didn't do the best job to get it done the last couple of weeks. But now we've got a lot of races going on. We're going to do a better job going forward here, hopefully. A lot of racing that's happened in the last 3 weeks or so since we did a podcast. And, you know, I don't think there's any reason to talk about every result, every race that's happened. But, you know, definitely kind of, you know, go over some of the top stuff that happened. Some of the biggest things that's happened in our sport, you know, rumor mill wise and otherwise, more factual type events. So, you know, let's start it off with let's talk about the Atlanta National event.
Yeah, so Atlanta, we had Aaron Stanfield won over Brandon Banky in Superstock. Aaron drove good all day. He's a good driver. He's double duty. I think he ran top dragster in Superstock this weekend. You know, drove good all day. No real issues. Banky drove pretty good too, but just not as good as Stanfield in the final. Stock, on the other hand, had Chip Johnson over Warren. Chip Johnson driving Darren Poole Adams' car. You know, Chip Johnson, all I can say is when it's your day, it's your day. I mean, he red-lighted 2 or 3 times. His opponent red-lighted first. So, you know, that brings up that discussion again, first or worst. I thought Warren did a better job driving all day, but, you know, you got to play by the rules.
Yeah, I think Darren, I could be wrong, but I think Darren Poole Adams owns both those cars.
You may be correct, actually.
Yeah, I believe he owns the car that Chip was driving and the car that that Warren was driving. I believe I could be wrong, but I know that Emily Stott drove one a little bit last year. I'm not sure if one of those cars are the one that she was driving or not. But, yeah, I'm pretty sure that he owns both those cars. You know, both drivers were red in the final a little bit, so – obviously, they were there to race in the final. It wasn't like he was getting team orders, so I do like to see that. And, you know, two racers raced a long time. I know I raced a lot with Chip Johnson. He calls himself the legend, self-proclaimed legend. But I tell you what, back in the day in ITRA, he did very, very well. I know that he's won 2 ITRA World Championships back in the day and has not had very much success the last couple of years now. Over on the NHRA side. So, you know, it was good to see him get his first win. I would agree, not the best driving I've seen him do by far. But like you said, when it's your day, it's your day. And like somebody told me a long time ago, I'd much rather be lucky than good. Another thing that I just want to mention about the Atlanta thing is I saw quite a few 1 second plus under runs down there. And, you know, Atlanta's not known for its speed, you could say. So, you know, I thought that was interesting, and I even heard that one Superstock guy that was 1 second under said that he was not worried about getting horsepower. He planned to be number one at every race the rest of the year.
Yeah, I think that person's probably driving a Copo, or not a Copo, but what do they call those? Just a regular, you know, Camaro. Kobo knockoff, I guess we'll call him, in stock. And I think there's a couple other guys that got a second under that. So, you know, everybody that's got those cars now, nobody seems to be protecting it the last 2-3 weeks here. So it's like the gloves are off, and those guys know they're going to get 2.25. So might as well run them at the top. You know, I saw Ronnie Troutman win a second under at Columbus. Marion's been a second under. I think Bobby Brandon went a couple, a second under with his. So
I think Al Quarter did as well.
Yep, nobody seems to be protecting it, so it looks like it's going to get 2.25 here, you know, come summertime. So.
And I believe Marion's super stock class is also going to get some horsepower as well.
Yeah, I think there's a couple guys running that. It's a 305 combination. You know, there's a – who else has got that? They ran a second under two. I'm drawing a blank here.
Irvin
Johns seems to want to protect.
Johns has that as well.
Yep, Irv's got it, and then there's one other person.
Reiki's here in Division Three. He's got that combination. Because
yep.
It's the same combination that my father runs, and it's going to get some horsepower as well.
Yeah, it's getting 1.25 prize for sure.
Yeah, it looks like I'm just looking at the results real quick for the qualifying results at Richmond, and Marion was number one in stock, 105 under, and 110 under in super stock to be number two. So he's trying to hold to what he said and said, screw it, just hammer it.
Yep. Everybody gets 2.25% comes the 4th of July.
Yeah, there you go. And now, Charlie, they have to go, if they go 120 under, or I guess where does it go to get the next step up in horsepower before the 4th of July? What do they have to do?
Just automatic horsepower.
Okay.
Once you get to that 110 under at 2.25 average, once a run's been made up there, there's really no other penalty if you go 119 or 118 or 115. But the penalty marker, I think, is a second 10, and then automatic is 120.
So really, as long as these guys don't go 120 under, there's really no penalty to do what they're doing.
Yeah, and to be honest, even if they do trickle it at 120 under, they're only going to get an extra percent, so you're really only looking at an extra 4 horsepower over what you're already getting. So it's not really, at this point, even that big of a deal for those guys. I mean, it is on paper if you get, you know, 12 or 13% all at one crack, but you got to remember they're going to get 8 or 9 already no matter what. So, you know, we may see somebody, you know, with Chicago, Norwalk, Epping, you know, we may see a heads up where somebody does go that 120 under, especially now that, you know, they're already eligible for that 2.25% on those combinations.
I tell you, it will be nice to have all those, you know, new Camaros and A-stock automatic in Indy, though.
Yeah, I mean, those cars will still be able to fit B, I mean, because they fit into C now, I believe, still.
I think so, yeah. So they can still run A or B.
Yeah, so it's not going to be, you know, the end of the world. I mean, to be honest, if Jason Lyon, they find a little more horsepower out of that Buick, you know, that thing should dominate C.
Yep.
Copo should dominate A and B. So really, it's not going to change anything at the top as far as I see.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, unless Jimmy Boudreaux's car is, you know, as good as everybody says it is right now, he found some more power and will take a 1078 at B weight, supposedly testing somewhere up in New Hampshire.
Yeah, 978.
Or excuse me, 978, not 878. Which
yeah,
is
I saw
40 under.
Yeah, I saw a time slip, and it was if it's accurate and the air was not super mine shaft, that's a pretty fast run.
Yeah, that's a pretty stout run out of a 396, 375 horse, even if it is aluminum head.
Yeah, I mean, his stuff's always, you know, Jim Boudreaux's stuff is always stout. And, you know, it's been proven legal. It's been torn down a couple times the last couple of years at Indy. So,
yeah, I mean, it's definitely the baddest 396, 375 horse out there. I'll put that card up against Jimmy DeFranks, anything. Anybody wants to throw any money down on that card, time. Engine to engine, you know, same combination. I'll take that bet any day of the week.
Yeah, it's definitely a pretty awesome car. The only other notes I have here from Atlanta is, once again, ran first round Friday night.
Yeah, I mean, weather looks shitty. I don't know if anybody's ever been to Atlanta. You know, it's kind of a dump anyways. I've been there when it rains. You've been there when it rains. It's not a fun place.
Nope.
I know it does suck because this is, what, the third race now in HRA has done that.
I think fourth, but yeah.
fourth. I think it, unfortunately, it sucks, but I think that is the right call. You know, it sucks looking at it because now that they've been able to do this 3-4 times, it's gone off. Basically, they've made the right call every time, trying to get people in and out and not have to stick around late Sunday or Monday to finish up Sportsman. You know, we're probably going to see more and more of this, I think. It's just a matter of time. So,
yeah, I mean, I tend to agree. It seems to be the right call. It does kind of suck in some ways, but I'll tell you what sucks worse is having to call off on Monday and race the national event on Monday after the pros have already gone home and the TV cameras are off. You know, that sucks pretty bad too. So
I
hope they just don't make it the norm and, you know, and it's just as needed. I do worry a little bit that since they've done it a few times and it seems to work out pretty good, that they're going to be too apt to switch to that. You know, we'll just, I guess, have to wait and kind of see how it plays out through the season. Hopefully, you know, now that we're almost to summer here, you know, we'll get a little bit less rain at some of these races and should have, you know, should need to use it less, hopefully.
Yeah, no, I agree. So, but it has been the right call. I mean, at Gainesville, we finished up Saturday night, you know, they ran first round, you know, at Atlanta on Friday. Where else was it? Charlotte, they did the same thing?
I think so, and the race in Texas as well, Houston.
Yeah, the race in Texas, which...
And Vegas,
know,
right? So,
yeah.
Isn't it Pomona or Vegas? I don't know if they did it both. One of them they did.
Yeah, I can't. It's less than 10. So
we'll monitor that throughout the year.
Enough about national events. Let's talk about Columbus. You know, I don't know what to say about Columbus and the weather decision. You know, I don't really agree with that strategy that the new division director did. You know, the weather looked like dog shit, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, you know, yeah, you got the Jags All-Star thing there. But at the end of the day, it's still Sportsman racing. You know, 85% of the people that go through that gate have got to go to some kind of a job on Monday morning.
That's right.
If you haven't made a pass Friday and Saturday, you know, you want to give everybody one pass and then try to run around eliminations on Sunday, you know, and then pull the plug, you know, from what I understand, you know, Sunday night at, you know, 9 o'clock, you know, when they were still racing going on and the track was fine, you know, they pulled the plug and didn't run another two rounds. Then they didn't start till 9 o'clock on Monday. You know, they screwed around all day on Monday. It sounded like didn't get done till 3-4 in the afternoon. It's just really ridiculous for me. I didn't go. I mean, I looked at it. I've seen clusters like that before. I've been to Columbus. It's not the greatest place to be when it's wet anyways. But there's a couple problems I got. You know, first off, if you're going to run that race and bring everybody there and make them be miserable Friday and Saturday, that's fine. Make the decision. But on Wednesday afternoon when you commit to that, at least have the common courtesy to say, hey, here's the plan, guys. Friday and Saturday don't look real good. We're going to finish this race on Sunday and Monday. You know, because of the All-Stars, because of that. But there was no communication whatsoever, you know, with the Sportsman Racer. You know, guys, Sunday morning, nobody still knew if we were going to get a time trial and then they were going to call it or try to make it up at Norwalk on Thursday. You know, there was zero communication, from what I understand, between mostly Stock, Super Stock, and a few Comp Eliminator guys, between the NHRA Tower and the division office people and the racers. And they're still the paying customer. And I just think that's unacceptable, personally.
Yeah.
Especially after what we saw out of the Baiters this weekend at Norwalk. I mean, these guys, they're running the show. On Tuesday, they say, hey, they put out this announcement about parking. You know, we're going to park Super Street, Super Comp, Super Gas, you know, from 4 to 10 o'clock at night. You know, the rest of everybody's going to come in from 10 to 5. We're going to stay open, you know. Everything was laid out to a T and not that hard. We pulled in at 2 o'clock in the morning and blew right in, parked, got no problems, no nothing. I mean,
and I'm pretty sure, because I was shortly just went to bed, Bill Bader was still parking at 2 a.m.
He was still out there in the golf cart, man. I mean, here's a guy with a multi-million-dollar facility. You know, he's not NHRA. He's just the track owner, and we've got more communication with the track owner than we do our own division director at this time.
Well, so, let's get back to Columbus a little bit before we get on to Norwalk. The schedule looked horrendous. You know, probably about as bad as it gets for the weekend. And I personally felt, they probably should have canceled it. You know, I would hope in hindsight that they probably would have canceled it. However, you know, with the Jags All-Star thing, you know, there were some people saying, hey, move it to the next weekend, but that's Mother's Day. You know, that doesn't go over so hot either. So I get that. And forecasts are usually, in my experience, not as bad as they look. I would say this one, though, was. It was really just as bad as it had looked, you know, kind of the week coming up. It was definitely long. You know, I spent almost 5 days in Columbus because we got there. It was the first race of the year for us, and we got there Thursday about. I left work after lunch and got down there. 2-3 o'clock, and was planning on making a few runs, only about 2 hours from my house. And so we were there, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. So five days for a points meet. Definitely a bit extreme. I think my wife summed it up best here. See what you think about this, Charlie. But she said, you know, Aaron, she was there most of the weekend. And she said, if you would have been racing in NHRA and all the races were like this when we met, I don't think we'd be married. You know, she said that. And she was serious. I mean, you know. And I'll tell you what, it was not much fun. It was a really long, frustrating weekend. Thursday the weather was nice, actually. It did rain, and it rained for a few minutes and ended the test session early. But for the most part, it was nice. And I will say Friday, you know, woke up with a lot of rain. It rained most of the day. They did call Friday fairly early. And as soon as they called, it just got bright, sunny out, and it was nice the rest of the night. I think they may have, in hindsight, called it a bit early on Friday. However, you know, that just seems to be how it works. As soon as you call it, it gets sunny. If you don't call it, it rains the rest of the day. So they did call it a little bit early on Friday, I guess, to try to give people time to, you know, go to dinner, hang out. You know, they knew it was going to be kind of a long weekend. So I think they tried to help there, but, you know, probably in hindsight called a little early. Saturday was you know, just kind of a more or less washout all day from what I remember. I mean, there were some times it didn't rain. We walked around a little bit and did some bench racing, but, I don't believe any cars went down the track on Saturday. And like you said, there really wasn't a good plan. There was some announcement Saturday night that they would finish, they would run as much as they could on Sunday, and then if they needed to, possibly stay to Monday. But there was never any plan on, you know, how much would they run on Sunday, what exactly the schedule would be, you know. They got a very late start on Sunday. I think there were some, I can't remember if it was the 5 days runs together, but either Sunday or Monday, there were some timing issues, and they started late both days, you know, with rain and timing. Sunday went pretty smooth. However, you know, right about dusk, you know, it's beautiful day out. It was probably upper 60s. You know, the racetrack was good. There was no problems. And we were up there in stock limiter, I believe, run around 2. And they announced, they said, hey, you know, we're going to stop for the night. And, man, I tell you what, I was pretty fired up because, you know, I mean, I'd already been there 4 days and, you know, had a lot to do on Monday, you know, back at work. And, I mean, it's a beautiful night. Everybody's here. Track's good. Just starting, they didn't even turn the lights on, so that tells you it wasn't even dark yet. And they quit, they pulled a plug. I mean, I feel like they easily could have ran a whole other round of Sportsman, and they just decided not to. You know, there were some rumors that, you know, maybe there was some water seepage coming up at the end of the track. You know, my answer to that would be, well, when the sun goes down, that's going to stop because the sun's going to come off of it. I also heard a rumor from a pretty good source that the owner gotten a little bit of a scuffle with NHRA and said that he wasn't turning the lights on. A guy that Charlie and I know worked at Musco Lighting for 30 years, you know, probably the biggest lighting vendor of all, you know, they do all the NASCAR tracks and special events and everything. And we talked to him, and he said that he thought that Columbus, looking at a light bill of probably $60 an hour, something like that. So it was actually a good bit cheaper than I thought it would be. I thought it would actually be a lot higher than that. But so if that is true, the guy didn't want to turn the lights on because he wasn't making any money, and it wasn't a good weekend because of car count and weather and things like that. I mean, that's a shame for a couple hundred bucks. You know, he keeps several hundred racers on the property for a whole nother day. You know, I hope that that's not accurate. But, you know, we stayed. We were pot committed. I had two cars in.
I'll go back to that point, though. I don't blame the track owner for that. I mean, you know, you look at the track owner looks at this deal. You know, it's raining. The weather forecast looks bad. He probably wants to move the event, I would think. You know, he probably lost 20 to 25 cars in each of the categories. So, I mean, you lose 100 cars at $170 entry now. I mean, that's, you know, what, $17,000 worth of, you know, income he's lost. You still got to pay out the same amount. So,
yeah, and I don't know exactly how that split works. But, yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I know these owners are brand new this year. This is a new ownership group. From, I believe, the state of Washington is where the guys are from. You know, and I will say they have definitely done a few improvements. You know, they seem to be pretty organized with, you know, paying and gates and that sort of thing. Parking went smoothly. You know, but yeah, I mean, to that point, I mean, the owner definitely probably took a bath to some extent. You know, their pit parking, anybody that was parked in the grass got stuck. They had a big tractor pulling people out. Obviously, had to pay for that, and I'm sure they got a lot of ruts and just a mess after, you know, pulling 30 or 40 rigs out of the grass.
Yeah, you know, it just goes back once again. You know, the racer's the paying customer, and I guess until guys just, you know, quit going to races like that, you know. I guess, you know, what's the big deal? I mean, I guess there was, what, 350 cars, 400 cars probably showing up that weekend, maybe? So, I mean, you know who do you blame? Do you blame the division director? Do you blame the track owner, the racer? You know, so.
Yeah, I guess if
the guy's made decisions like that and, you know, 10 stockers showed up and 20 super stockers and 4 comp cars, I mean, you know, and 20 cars in each super category, I mean, maybe it would send a message. But, you know, you're never going to get back because you got, you know, everybody's got too big ego not to go. So,
yeah.
To go, like you said, under 5 days, spend $170, race for $1,000 contingency, you know.
Yeah, you know, I was really excited to go racing my first time of the year. I had all the cars ready to go, and, you know, it wasn't much fun. It was a pretty long weekend, and, you know, we'll stop beating that dead horse. But, you know, there was some good racing that went on. You know, I think that, you know, a lot of good racing. You know, Columbus, for those of you that have not been there, the return road kind of runs up right by the track and then right about the finish line kind of turns off. And, you know, one of the coolest things I think about Columbus is after you win or lose your round, there's usually 10, 15 cars pulled over down there and parked, and guys get out. And there's usually a group of 40 or 50 people, you know, in that particular class, you know, friends and people that have lost maybe or that sort of thing, kind of standing right at the finish line because you have a really good view of the finish line and kind of watching the end of the round. So that's one kind of cool thing about Columbus that makes it really easy, you know, to kind of view the finish line. And it's kind of fun to, you know, after you win a round, especially, to stop by and, you know, talk to some of the other racers and that maybe just watched your round or, you know, compare to see what they did and that sort of thing. So, you know, that's one good thing about Columbus. And you know, even though I was run stock and super stock and went some rounds in both, you still got to watch some of the race. And, you know, it looked to me like there was quite a bit of good racing, you know, which doesn't always happen the first race or two of the season for a lot of people, but a lot of good racing and super talk. You had, you know, always tough Jeff Donna over Ricky Decker. You know, those guys are, you could probably say best friends. I mean, they're very good friends. They park together at every race. And they had a very good race in the final. Both of them were, I believe Jeff was 00 on the tree. And Decker was in the teens or high teens. And they had a heck of a race. So,
yeah, both drove good all day. I mean, Jeff was really on. I think his worst light was a 28 or something. You know, really for the first race of the year, he was on it. So along with Ricky, I mean, that was one that, you know, like you said, man, both those guys are really good buddies, and you know, somebody's got to win and somebody's got to lose.
Yeah, so you know, good start to the season, Super Stock. You know, both of them have won the division several times, I believe. I know Jeff has. Ricky's definitely won the division at least once, if not more, and he was world champ maybe 10, 12 years ago. So, you know, both very accomplished racers, and both had a heck of a weekend. Stock was a little bit of the opposite thing. You had Logan Galbraith, who is the son of, you know, probably one of the best comp racers in Division III, Troy Galbraith. He's, you know, multi-time Division III winner. He's won Sportsman Driver of the Year, I know. You know, last 4 or 5 years, he's probably been one of the most dominant comp racers in D3. But his son, I think he's, I don't know how old he is, 16, 17, 18, young. He's young. And this was kind of his first season racing that car. And it's, what is it, in stock automatic car, I believe, Charlie?
Yeah, it's a car Danny Ashley built when he, probably 20 years ago, maybe longer than that. It's changed hands a couple of times, but real good car. You know, Logan started running that car last year. They ran a couple combos with us and a couple of the other series. I think he ran it maybe at the Fall Classic. You know, he had a heads up in the final over Kenny Friedman, both end cars, but, you know, Logan's car probably about 3 to 4 tenths advantage, I would say, over Kenny. So that was kind of a older before it started type deal. So, but he drove good all day for a young kid. I mean, like you said, his dad's probably, I would say, the best comp driver right now. I mean, in Division III, he just won here last weekend at Norwalk, and we were watching him at the finish line against some guys, and you know, he's really good.
Yeah, he definitely is, and they're both, you know, I don't know Logan real well because he's you know, just showed up on the scene, but his dad's a heck of a nice guy, and you know, good to see them win. And Ken Friedman, he's been racing a long time. You know, I don't know, that may be his first final, but also a nice guy, kind of a quiet guy, but nice, heck of a nice guy. And to see two slow cars in the final, which you don't see too often in stock eliminator anymore, and to be heads up with that, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then the only other kind of thing that happened at Columbus that was a little unfortunate is John Stock, long time, you know, mostly super stock racer, who's got into comp a little bit the last couple of years off and on. He bought Vinny Barone's street roadster last year and has been racing it this year. He was in an unfortunate incident. He ended up kind of getting out of shape and put it up on its side. But you know, I talked to him then. I talked to him at Norwalk, and he was completely fine, completely safe. The car is fixable, but, you know, I saw some stuff on Class Racer, just kind of want to clarify that, but he was safe. He was good. You know, everything did its, you know, protected him in every way. And, yeah. You know, so good to see that. And I think that car will be back racing. It wasn't tore up too bad. And,
yeah, it didn't look too bad. And I talked to Rick Brown and those guys, and they said it was definitely fixable.
Yeah. So he was good to go. You know, a little bummed out, obviously, but, he was back at Norwalk racing his, super stock ride, and you know, hopefully we'll see him back out in comp before the year's over. The other race we had the same weekend as Columbus was Boise, had their points meet. Again, several 1 second underruns, I know, in stock eliminator, and you know, some definitely got some horsepower ticks there. I know Joe Sorensen went very fast with his, you know, first gen Camaro. And there was definitely some guys at Columbus talking about that, since nothing else to do, wasn't racing much. But,
yep.
You know, Bob Stoltz was over Cody Lane in Superstock, and the always tough Scott Burton over Joe Sorensen. So, you know, a lot of well-known names out there did well. I don't think they had a huge car count out there, but, you know, that's a factored track, I believe. Right, Charlie?
Yeah. Real good to see Scott Burton, you know, get a win. He just bought that car from Irvin Johns here at Gainesville. I think that was only the second or third race. I know he won class with it at Vegas.
Yep.
So it's a relatively new car. It's a pushrod engine. So real good to see him have some success early on with that over Joe Sorensen.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the Burtons have been tough. Him and his son, obviously, have won a lot of races this year already, so they've been tough. And yep. Interesting to see, you know, what he does now that he's got the new car and kind of changes it up a little bit. The other thing I want to touch on a little bit here on our list is, you know, there was a lot of scuttlebutt online and some of the different forums. I saw some stuff on Facebook. But NHRA announced that for the All-Star race, which is coming up quick here, 2 weeks at Chicago, that they will be tearing down stock and super stock. And I believe they said come show up with a head off, correct?
Yeah, they came out this last week and clarified, you know, if it was a modified super stock or you could just P&G unless it was a CS or something that had that steel head. I can't remember which class that is. But,
yep, it's CS. Yep.
Yeah, they said if you ran CS, you'd have to take the head off still because there's something you can't do in there. But all the other, you know, super mod or modified, and then the modified stock cars, you know, just a P&G and a carburetor check was all that would be required. Also, I noticed on that they're going to do the same with the Comp Eliminator, and they were going to do the same with the alcohol cars. They're going to make those guys pull ahead and just kind of check some stuff out and see what's going on there. And they're going to do an electronics check in the 890, 990, and the 1090 cars.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, I think,
but
you know,
it's good.
Think,
it's gotten a little lax in the past 5 years, I would say. So I think it's good they made this announcement, you know, kind of, you know, to say, hey, this is, you know, we know the last 2 years things were kind of lax. There's no teardown. Was it the last 2 years? I know it wasn't last year, but I think it was the last
I believe the last 2 years. I was the All-Star rep last year for Division III. I was fortunate enough to do that. And there was no teardown. We brought head gaskets and you know, everything to tear down, thinking we might have to. Showed up early, and we got there on, I guess it would have been Wednesday. And they didn't even tech us in, you know, because now at national events, you don't really do the tech. So we were kind of surprised by that. You know, we had heard the rumors that the year before they hadn't torn down. I think it was a little bit weather-related. It was part of the reason the year before, if I remember correctly. But I know talking to Andrew Hill, yeah, they didn't tear down the year before. And then I was kind of surprised. They didn't at least, you know, bring the car over or look it over a little bit. I mean, they did nothing. So, you know, I mean, the All-Star thing, you know, it's kind of a big deal. And, you know, there's quite a bit of money on the line and bragging rights and all that jazz. So, you know, I don't mind a little tear down. I think it's something that's always happened historically. And, you know, I am glad they clarified it. Being a guy with a modified car, it's taking a head off an SB2 is a lot more work than like a traditional small block, but probably a lot like your Cobra Jet deal. But we'll see. I am, you know, I'm a little surprised they announced it so early and so blatant. You know, if you're really trying to catch people, I think it'd be something you'd, you know, wouldn't announce months before they were doing it. But you know, it is good to announce it and let people at least know that they're ready for it. You know, some guys are traveling a long way, and you know, if they knew they hadn't done it the last couple of years and weren't prepared, didn't have the right tools or the right you know, head gaskets, things like that. You know, I would hate to see somebody go, have to tear their motor down, not get it back together correctly, and not be able to race. That wouldn't be right either. So,
yeah.
So we'll see how that goes. We'll definitely spend some time talking about the All-Stars in 2 weeks and results, and maybe even do some picks on that. Because that's always, you know, it's one of the events that's really just about the sportsman. So, you know, last year was my first time doing the NHRA All-Stars. And, you know, it was fun. It was not, I didn't do very well, so it wasn't as fun as it could have been. But, you know, they tried to make it special for you. So.
Yeah, I heard a rumor last weekend that there was some scuttlebutt of maybe bringing the All-Star race back to Columbus now that the Sports Nationals is back there in the fall, especially with Jegs being the main sponsor. So something maybe to keep an eye on.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think it would be cool to have it kind of at the end of the year. I kind of like that idea. And, you know, I'm all for Columbus, who's 2 hours from the house. You know, obviously a little further from somebody in, you know, Seattle or California.
Yeah, I mean, but that's, the All-Star race was always in Columbus for 30 years.
Yep.
And the other thing to look at is now with the 2020 schedule out, you know, Chicago's going to be, I think, like July 8th. For those of you who've never been to Chicago in July, it's probably not the most pleasant place in the world.
No, it is not.
We ran a points meet there one time, and I believe it was 102 degrees every day, and it was just probably one of the nastiest races I've ever been to was that place in July. So, you know, it's kind of all adding up that, you know, I heard Jegs was putting a little pressure on to bring it back to Columbus. This move with weather being nasty, you know, and going to July there. So it's a possibility.
Yeah, that'd be cool. And I mean, you know, at the Sportsman race, it would be kind of the premier part of it, which that you know, they if done right, they could make that really cool.
I agree 100%. You know, that's the problem when it was the TRW race. You know, it was, I think they did a lot better job 25, 30 years ago promoting that race than they do now.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, should ask Cody Lane when he was on here, but my Jeff Blaine flew in and drove my dad's Super Stocker at Columbus probably in, 2000-ish, maybe. No, it's probably before that, maybe late 90s. Drove the Cavalier I drive today. And so I remember kind of being around it, and it was a big deal back then. I mean, the dinner was big, giveaways were big, you know, and this last summer, it was still cool. They tried to make it special. You know, Jegs, I think, does a great job, but, you know, it wasn't quite as cool as I thought it would be.
No, it's kind of the general consensus I've heard the last 4 or 5 years.
Now, if I'd have won it, I'd probably be telling you it was the coolest thing ever, so. See how it goes. So, okay, well, we'll talk about that. Let's see. Another thing I just want to talk about is, you know, because especially since I have a little bit of experience with this, I know Charlie has probably even more, but, you know, there's a couple big events coming up in Canada over the next month or two, both in Eastern Canada and then also at Toronto Motorsports Park. And I saw some scuttlebutt on Class Racer, some guys kind of arguing about how hard it is to cross the border. You know, a lot of people saying it's no big deal. A few people guys saying, you know, that it's terrible and you'll never go to Canada again, that sort of thing. But, you know, I mean, IHRA, back when Charlie and I ran a lot of IHRA, was, you know, we ran three events, I think, a year in Canada, two national events, and they had a points meet at Grand Bend there for a few years.
Yeah.
And I can tell you what, it's never been an issue whatsoever for us. You know, it's usually very easy to get into Canada. They don't even ask questions, really. They just, you pull up to the gate, where are you going, racing, oh, have fun. Like, it's, you know, it's really not hard. You know, it is good. You know, you got to obviously have your passports. You need to have, it is good to have
I think it depends on where you go in at. You know, we always went up to Port Huron, up to Sarnia, you know, in Michigan.
Yep.
You know, that's always a little easier. It's not quite as hectic as the bridge there in Detroit. You know, I have gone in and out from Niagara a few times, you know, just work-related stuff. And it has been a little tougher over there than it is in Michigan to get through, I will say that. We had trouble one time getting back in. So the biggest thing is the cars that they're, you know, body of white cars or, you know, you can't find titles to them. That's probably the biggest issue I would see going back and forth to Canada.
I mean, I would, you know, but they, I try, you know, they used to put kind of a thing out of what you should do, what you shouldn't do, that sort of thing. You know, definitely have your passports, have that stuff ready, you know, when you pull up to the gate. You know, they always said to kind of carry a list of what you're bringing in, you know, cars, tools, generator, you know, that sort of thing. I can tell you I probably went across the border 20 times with a race car trailer. I don't think that list was ever actually used, but definitely not a bad idea to have that. Both the race cars I have were body and white cars. Was never an issue with that either. I really think the best advice, have as much paperwork as you have with you in case you need it. You know, being prepared is always good. You know, when you roll up to the gate, answer their questions, yes, sir, no, sir. You know, be serious, have your passport.
You know, don't joke with them, you know. And I think you're going to have a good experience, you know. If they sense that you're trying to do something shady, you know, they're going to ask more questions. You know, if you know where you're going, you know, where you're staying, you know, questions like that. You know, they're not asking because they care where your hotel you're staying at. They're just asking to make sure you have a plan, that you're not just rolling in there, you know, with a load of drugs or something. So, you know, I think if you're courteous, have your paperwork in order. You know, I would say that, you know, we always had pretty good experiences going to Canada. I would say, if anything, you know, you got more questions coming back in. It sounds like your experience was the same.
Yeah, for the most part, we had just had trouble getting back in one time. So, but it wasn't too bad.
But yeah, so, I mean, I think that's the advice I'd give. You know, get your paperwork in order. But I definitely would not go to a good race just because it's across the border. You know, I think in today's climate, it can easily be done. You know, definitely, you know, expect that, you know, sometimes there's some traffic at the border and it can take a little bit, especially on like a Sunday afternoon, especially in Port Huron, you know, in the summertime. It can take a little bit of time kind of getting through. But, yeah, I would, you know, the Canadians are, you know, the fans up there are great. They love stock and super stock. Some of my better racing memories in IHRA were in Canada at some of those races. So, you know, I know there's a couple big races coming up. And, you know, if you were not going because of the border, you were scared of the border, you know, I would probably rethink that. You know, there's a lot of Canadian or American racers that cross over quite a bit, you know, that kind of live in that New York, Ontario area. And you can definitely, you know, talk to them and get some more feedback. But, you know, if anybody on the podcast has any questions, you can reach out to Charlie or I, and we'll try to hook you up with Wally or somebody that does it all the time. And, you know, I think.
Yeah, I would say if anybody's got any questions, you know, I mean, I know Doug Box, he goes through all the time. Wally's another one. there's a couple other guys in Division Three. I know Bill Little and Glenn Stolle used to, and that whole crew.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, definitely look at those races above the border. You know, it's really not that far to get to, you know, Toronto Motorsports Park. If you go through in Buffalo, is about an hour from the border. Maybe just touch over the border. And it's a really nice, it's a pretty cool place. So not bad. And I think, Grand Bend is a very scenic area right on the little beach town. It's kind of a cool place. Track not as nice, but kind of cool. You know, it's probably, I don't know, what, hour and 20 minutes from the border, maybe or less.
Yeah, maybe.
It's not bad at all. It's an easy trip.
Yeah.
So, all right, so we just want to touch on that. And then we want to touch about the, you know, we had a couple races this past weekend. We had a national event in Richmond. And then we also had points meet at Norwalk that Charlie and I were both in attendance on, and also a race at Fontana out in the D7. So what do you want to talk about first, Charlie?
I was shooting with Virginia first. You know, we had Joe Santangelo won out there. You know, Joe's always a good driver in super stock. Can't remember who he ran in the final. And then Ty Dent won his first national event also in stock. Good to see him. He's driving good. He's gotten beat a couple times, heads up by some more under-factored combos than his. His car runs pretty good, but it's nice to see him get his first victory out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And Joe took out Steve Camilla in the final.
I forget that? Man, I looked at that just 20 minutes ago, and I was going blank. You know, Camilla drove really good, too.
And I tell you what, I ran Camilla. I think we talked about this on the podcast. I ran Camilla first round at Englishtown one year, and he definitely strapped it on me. But out of all the Hemi guys, he actually races. He takes it seriously. And I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm not even going to go out on a limb because he is by far the best bracket racer out of the Hemi crowd that there has been ever. And it was good to see him get to a final because, you know, those cars are not easy to bracket race. They're not easy to race. They're very expensive to race. And, you know, he's definitely never scared to go out there and race it, put in the eliminator. He's definitely not there getting great points at points meets. He tries to race. And I give him huge props for that.
Yeah, I mean, him and his old man, they're about as best as they come, dude. I mean, they're just really good people. I've known them forever. You know, can't say enough about them.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, Ty Dent, another great guy. You know, he has not been racing as quite as much the last couple of years. He had some family, some issues. His wife was sick. And you know, it's good to see him back out there racing and winning rounds. And over, you know, very tough Joe Lisa in the final. I think Joe had the tree a little bit. He was 25 to Ty Dent, as most people call him, 36 on the tree. And looks like the race was less than 100, very close race in the final. So, and Santangelo, just to mention, also got down to four in stock limiter as well. And Ty Dent took him out in round five. So, Joe, always tough driving Anthony's cars, went deep in both eliminators. But I'd say the biggest scuttlebutt in Virginia was not the winners and runner-ups, but what happened third round. Did you see any of this on Facebook or any of the class racer forum?
Yeah, saw a little bit of it. I know we talked to a couple guys that were there, and this pro track prep that NHRA's got going on right now is not really that great. You know, I guess a bunch of guys, you know, superstock guys with, you know, not real big inch motors, you know, blowing the tires off. It was just kind of a real shit show from what I understand. We watched a little bit of it on, what's the All Access now? What do they call that? Is it still All Access or has it got another name?
I believe it's still All Access.
Yeah. But, you know, you can watch it, man. It's just painful to watch guys spend, you know, 2-3 days and thousands of dollars between equipment, fuel entries, and go up there and once again, you know, something that's totally out of your control, track prep, you know, decide the outcome of the race. I mean, really no excuse for it, but, you know, that's the sandbox that we're in this week.
Yeah, I talked to Cody Phillips and kind of got the scoop and what happened, and he said basically they had run top fuel right prior to third round of Superstock. So, I believe they started this last year. They were trying to, you know, make the professional racing a little bit better. I know they had backed off some on the track prep, I had heard, to try to, you know, even the racing out a little bit or make it so they just didn't all go down through there every time, I guess. And, you know, and supposedly from some of the Superstock guys were saying online and what Cody had said, that the track was just awful in the one lane especially. It seems like all, you know, almost every car had problems. You know, a lot of the Superstock racers these days are running radials. You know, and if you have ever used a radial or spun with a radial, there's no recovery. Once you spin, I mean, it goes up like a top fueler, smokes the tire. So, you know, there's no recovery. If you have a bias fly tire and, you know, turn the tire half tire, it'll hook back up and you can go. And yeah, you might lose a little bit, but you know, it's not the end of the world, but a lot of guys running radials now, and you know, Cody said that you know, it really affected the outcome, you know, in Superstock especially. I don't know if it was as bad in some of the other classes. I would assume it would have been, but in Superstock, I know, and he said in round three, you know, several of the cars just went up, you know, in smoke. Marion was one of them. I know Cody about hit the wall, he said, and I know the Warners had some issues as well. He said the only person in the left lane that really didn't have a problem was Kent Hanley. So, you know, and that was third and fourth round they had some problems. So I'm assuming that affected other classes as well. I know it definitely got vocalized, you know, with I think it was one of the Warner twins kind of put a post on Facebook, and it had, last time I looked, had like 100 comments. So it was definitely, you know, some of the scuttlebutt after Richmond. And, you know, I agree with what you said, Charlie. I mean, it is kind of what you're dealt with. You know, I'm used to running. You know, I grew up kind of racing iDRA, where we went to some of the tracks that were not as nice. You know, I'm used to not having national event prep. You know, I'm used to going to Clay City in July and racing on that surface. So I've always kind of, you know, especially in the summertime in Division III, I run bias fly tires. I run a much bigger tire than I need. You know, because I want to be able to hook in the staging lanes, you know, and I've seen where we've gotten to some of these tracks and, you know, the prep gets a little marginal on these guys with these small, you know, 12-inch wide radials trying to go a second under. you know, have issues. And some of that I say, yeah, the track needs to be, you know, the prep needs to be consistent, right? But, you know, some of it's like, you know, do you really need to run a 12-inch radial? In Richmond, I got a neighbor up here that runs Top Sportsman, and he was talking to some of his friends, and I guess at Richmond, the track temperature was 135 degrees. So, I mean, the track, you know, was hot down there. You know, the weather wasn't good. Was it prepped as good as it should have been? Absolutely not. You know, do they need to be consistent lane to lane? I think that would be a big help. But at the same time, you know, in the summertime, you know, you're going to get that every once in a while. So I think we as racers have to take a little bit of the you know, the onus as well. But, yeah, it's just a tough situation. And as much money as we have invested in going to these national events, I mean, it's, you know, easily $1,000 plus to go to a national event, if not more, let alone your value of your car, motor and trailer, et cetera. So to lose, you know, for something like that can be extremely frustrating.
Yeah.
For sure. Okay, so that's the Richmond deal. And let's talk about Fontana next. In Superstock, you had always tough Kyle Rizzoli over Wayne Taylor. This was his, I believe, Kyle's 10th win, 10th divisional win. Also has 11 runner-ups, so he's getting close back to even up on that. this was Wayne Taylor's third final and third runner-up. So he's got the runner-up blues. He was 001 red in the final to Kyle, who was a conservative 40 and looks like he lifted to be 13 over. But, you know, Kyle drove pretty good all day. He was, you know, teens and 20s most of the day. And, you know, Wayne Taylor was halfway decent as well. So looks like they had a fairly good crowd out there, pretty good race. In stock eliminator, you had John Irving, Mr. Mopar out there on the West Coast over Leo Glassbrenner.
Yeah, I mean, John drove pretty good all day. I mean, he opened up around 50, then he was, you know, 15, 30, 23, 007, 36. Pretty solid. You know, Leo is always a solid driver out there. I wouldn't say he was as solid as he normally is. He had a light, it's a below par, like he had a 100 and a 70, but, you know, he still managed to get all the way to the final, and he was 50 in the final. He just, you know, broke out a little bit more, chasing him through. He actually, if he would have bailed at the end, he probably could have won that race if he would have bailed, even with a 50 versus a 36, but he did bail, just not enough. On a double breakout.
Yeah, for sure. So it looked like he had some good racing out there. And some guys in the winner's circle that you don't see quite as much, you know. Obviously, Kyle's has won a lot of races out there, and so has Leo. But, you know, John, not as many, and it was good to see him in the final.
Yep.
Division 3 Norwalk. So, you know, coming up to Norwalk, Charlie and I were both this race. You know, the weather was not looking as good again. And I was a little worried. They did communicate well and put out a thing with some interesting parking strategies. But I tell you what, it was smooth. It was organized. And, you know, everybody got parked on time. For the most part, the race went off without a hitch. We had a little bit of rain overnight on Friday night. Quite a bit of rain Friday night. Got a little bit of a late start on Saturday, and they canceled one of the time runs. But, you know, I was okay with that decision. You know, to be able to get the race done in a timely manner.
You know, the only thing I will kind of disagree upon, I've been on both ends of the stick on this. You know, it seems to, you know, when you cancel that last qualifying session like they did, you know, the guys that pulled in Saturday that didn't come Friday because of work or whatever, you know, they gave them a pass. And, you know, if you're sitting there and you're there Thursday and Friday and, you know, you get your two time shots, you know, it's kind of a being penalized for showing up and being there on time. You know, prime example, you know, we'll just use Bob Marshall here. You know, he rolls in the gate Friday after work, you know, gets worked all day, didn't make the time shot because they canceled the cleanup. So we pull in Saturday morning, they canceled the, you know, last time shot. Well, you know, he goes up there and makes a run, and now he's the only one that's made a run, and we're going to run first round in 2 hours. You know, the weather was totally different and this and that. You know, versus, you know, putting those guys on the bottom and saying, hey, you know, you had your chance to come on Friday, you know, sorry about your luck. So there's two ways you can look at that. I don't know what the right answer is, but I know it seems to rub a lot of people, you know, a little raw when, you know, they cancel that last session, you know, and especially when a day has gone by and you let, you know, a half a dozen to a dozen cars that show in up that morning, you know, make a pass, you know, like in Super Street, you know, you had a guy make a pass and come right back around 45 minutes later to run first round or even less. You know, is that fair to the other, you know, 50 cars that are going up there and trying to dial, you know, in the morning?
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I kind of forgot about that. You are absolutely right. I totally disagree with that call. I think that, you know, Bob Marshall should have been allowed to run, but he should have been put on the bottom of the ladder. And, you know, it was on him for not coming,
you know,
on Friday.
And nothing against that, Neil, because, you know, we've all done it. I did it at St. Louis a couple years ago. Came in, you know, had to work, showed up Saturday, looked like it was going to rain, you know, and they said, you know, hey, you know, you, I think it was myself and somebody else, because actually I think you were set up on a heads up before we showed up, myself.
Yeah.
And somebody else can move the ladder, and everybody was complaining about it, said, you know, well, you know, those guys should go to the bottom because this, or then they gave us a run. And so I think there needs to be some kind of a...
Needs to be consistent.
You know, standard. It needs to be consistent because, you know, we've been to Florida in a different division, and they say, nope, we're putting you on the bottom, and we're going right in. We're not going to screw around for an hour with this. We're going right in elimination. Then you go to another division, and it's like, nope, we're going to give everybody a time run that didn't get a time run. So... You know, that to me, it needs to be either one way or the other. There shouldn't be a gray area there. It should either be, you know, if we cancel this last one, we're putting you on the bottom, you know, or we're giving everybody a run no matter what. So,
yeah,
because they
did that
10 years ago at Trails at the Sports Nationals. You know, we showed up, you know, Saturday morning, and they said, ah, we're going right into eliminations and put 10 guys on the bottom of the sheet, you know.
If I remember correctly, it is not in the rule book. I think it's up to the division director's discretion.
It's the division director's discretion.
I agree. I think they need to fix that because I tell you what, if I'd have known that I could have showed up at Norwalk and got a run an hour and a half before we ran first round stock, I mean, I'd have done that instead of getting two runs the day before when it was 20 degrees difference. Why not work another day, show up? It's like a bracket race. Run it in a run time trial, come right back around, run first round. So. I agree. It did not have a huge effect at Norwalk because there was one stalker, one super stalker, and a few cars in the other classes. But I do know there was a lot of people talking about it, and I had kind of forgot about that. But you're right. That was something I definitely didn't agree with. I mean, I understand, you know, why they probably did it, but I think you got to be consistent going forward.
You know, nothing against the racers. No, I just think that rule should be, you know, just a cut and dry rule. I mean, there shouldn't be, you know, one division does it this way, one division does it the other way, and nobody knows what's going on 100% of the time.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So, you know, that was kind of the deal there. You know, on to the results portion. Ricky Decker, we just talked about him at Columbus, off to a great start in Division Three. He was the winner.
Yeah, I mean,
here,
you know, comes
Super
out of the. You know, Ricky comes out, you know, first few races of the year, you know, both barrels firing, you know, runners up to Dona here 2 weeks ago, you know, wins here at Norwalk, you know, was 40 the first couple of rounds, and then, you know, in the middle of the day, you know, 14, 2, 15, 20, you know, was mid-30s in the final. I mean, just really solid driving, you know, good job at the finish line the whole time, you know, didn't break out except for the final and a double breakout. So, just,
yep.
You know, he's odds-on favorite to win the division, I would say, now with two races in and, you know.
189 points, yeah.
Yeah. And that's going to be a tough one to overcome unless the wheels just fall off.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. And, you know, he did a solid job, as always, and, you know, had some luck his way and was able to get it done, almost done 2 weeks in a row. So, heck of a start to the season. He's definitely the odds-on favorite to win the division.
once again. And, you know, him and Stevie work hard at it. They do a good job. And, you know, I think it'll be tough to beat. But I, for one, will definitely be chasing him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, big shout out to Steve also. You know, Steve's kind of the guy behind the scenes there. You know, he's helping a lot of teams, you know, Dupps and a couple other comp guys. But him and his brother, they've been racing with each other for a long time, and their dad, Paul. You know, Steve's just if for those of you who don't know Steve, I mean, probably one of the best chassis guys setting up a super stock or a comp car in the country. So.
Yep, absolutely. So that was super stock and stock. You had David Pazak over Rob.
Yeah, we had Rob Dollarbill. Dollarbill, you know, hog brother for life, unfortunately. Was 006 to Dave 68 in the final. Dave was dead on zero. Dollarbill broke out a Hun, you know, just hogging it up. Needed to take, you know, half a 10th stripe instead of 600. So.
I know that, I don't know how many years ago this was, but Dollar Bill's car did not have the nice paint job that it has now. But he got in a bit of an accident there at Norwalk, right?
Yeah, he got T-boned by Harold, I can't think of his name, but he had one of Bo Kennedy's old Firebirds.
Yep.
They were racing down there, and one of the brakes locked up, and he got crossed over into the Dollar Bill there, and, you know, trying to put a damper on the old Chevrolet. So
yeah, I was
fixed up and painted up now, and he's always been a tough driver. I know he runs some combo races and some stuff, and you know, he normally goes a few rounds of that thing, and he's always a threat to win for an MN car.
Yeah, he took a few years off, I think, while he's kind of getting that fixed. I remember we were sitting in line for the scales. I saw that happen, probably 7 or 8 years ago. And that four-door took a pretty good hit, but it was definitely pretty screwed up. And, you know, he Dollar Bill drove great throughout the day. I mean, he was 005, 50, 006, 50, and 006 the last five hits with 300 lights. He was 20 second round, took out some good racers, took out Jim Baburka, Steve Azzorni, Rudrick, our, you know, all-star pick, took out Tom Russell in the semis. I mean, so he was doing good, and got all the way to the final, had a significant advantage on the tree, and let David sneak in there for the win. You know, and David was solid. He was good when he needed to be. You know, took out the always tough Bob Downing in round one.
Yeah, Robert, he took himself out. I think he was 009 red and ran dead on with a four, I think. So Robert could have been 50. Could have been the other way, maybe.
Could have been Robert in the final instead of
we got to get Robert to put together at least four rounds without red light, and that's been a tough strategy for him. He seems to get a little antsy.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But yeah, so overall, good weekend at Norwalk. They did finish before the rain came Sunday evening, so that was good. So, you know, got a couple races in the books in Division III. Now we got a little bit of a break. I think next race is July 4th weekend, right, at Indy. So got a pretty nice little break before the next race here. But, you know, I just wanted to touch on the national point standings for stock and super stock. I know that we've been kind of talking about this every couple of weeks, so just want to touch on that. Marion's still in the lead, tied with David Rampey for number one. I know that you were kind of saying you didn't think he'd hang on. Now, he's gone to a lot of races. But he is still hanging on with 453 points.
Yeah.
In Superstock, you know, Emily Volkman in third, Jeff Longahaney in fourth. You got Aaron Stanfield snuck into number six. Cody Lane, Slate Cummings, and Justin Lamb rounding out the top 10. So it'll be interesting to see if these West Coast guys kind of make a run at it, Justin or Cody. You know, Slate's always
a lot of hitters up there so far. I mean, just it'll be an interesting year, I think. You know, we'll know more come August, September.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, you got a lot of guys like Ricky Decker that's gone to two races, got 189 points. I mean, if he keeps on any sort of pace of going rounds at every race, you know, come August, he'll be up in that top 10 as well. So we'll see how that goes.
In Stock Eliminator, we have Jeff Longahaney in number one with 443 points. Mike McMahon and Slate Cummings rounding up the top three. You know, Jeff, after the Division II, they've obviously gone to more races than everybody else, but sitting number one and number four, not sure that that'll hang on, but, you know, heck of a job being number one and four in two classes so far. So he's definitely had one of the best springs down south, kind of going around. And Cody Lane in seventh, so he's top ten in both right now. Slate, third in stock, he's top ten in both as well. And Marion actually is tenth in stock too. So we got three guys or four guys that are top ten in both classes. So I can tell you that that's definitely never happened at the end of the year. And I can't imagine it'll happen this year. But, yeah, it's kind of a cool story. I always got to get Charlie up there in the top ten. We'll be set.
I've been up there a few times. It's not when you're up there. It's normally November that counts. That was all. I've been up there. I've led, you know, in August and September, and it don't mean shit. It's what happens, you know, at the end of November where you're at.
No, absolutely. Yeah, I think I was up to third or fourth one year. Early in the year when I did good down in Atlanta that one year. And I had a decent year, but I dropped out of the top 10 pretty quick. You know, if you don't go rounds.
I led going into Indy one year. That was pretty cool. You know, everybody's talking about it and this and that. But there's definitely a lot to think about, especially with a lot of racing left. And, you know, we really haven't even got into the heart of the season yet.
No, absolutely not. So, you know, I'd say somewhere around, I'd say usually by Indy, you know, you got a pretty good idea who's going to be a player, you know, who's going to be in the ballpark. And, you know, there's some guys that definitely have some decent point totals, but I would say there's nobody yet that's just way out there that, you know.
Nobody's walking away with it like Brad Burton did here.
No, you know, no odds-on favorite yet. You know, Justin Lamb's not won three national events yet, that sort of thing, like it's happened the last couple of years. So should be a good battle to watch throughout the rest of the year, and we'll definitely keep tabs on it. So
I agree.
Any other Chuck D. rumors here before we hang it up for the week?
Nothing. It's been pretty slow. Just guys going racing and, you know, get ready to – maybe it's a national event here in June.
Just thank you guys for being patient with us. We'll definitely get back into our routine now that we got some stuff out of the way. Get Charlie on a schedule here. Try to get him organized.
Yeah, you can blame me. I'll take the fall.
We know he's not farming because when it rains 20 some days in a row, they're not playing. I'll tell you that.
We ain't doing nothing, buddy.
Let me ask you, how long will it take for that to dry out? If it don't rain,
man, it keeps raining, so I don't know. I mean, I think we'll be lucky to plant anything in May. I think, to be honest with you, today is the 21st, 20th. I mean, it's bad.
Your family's been farming on that land for how many years now?
Oh, my grandfather's been there 94 years, his whole life. His dad owned it and grandfather, so it's. It's the worst we've seen it in a long time. I mean, we got flooded here 3 weeks ago. We had, you know, 4 inches of rain in 5 hours, and it dried up for about a week, and then about every 3 days we get a half inch of rain, so it just keeps coming. So.
Yeah, well, more time for the podcast. I guess that's the only good thing.
Yeah, more time for the podcast and the 69 Camaro. So.
Now you got the watermelon at least run down the track, you know, was – 69 Camaro, A stock automatic car that Charlie and Paul Wong owned. They debuted at Norwalk. And, you know, I think you guys were a little disappointed with the results, but then again, you definitely made a lot of progress.
Yeah, just, you know, new old car gremlins, man. I mean, just stupid mistakes and, you know, like not tightening down distributor nuts and timing it at 38 degrees in the shop and then it moving to 16 degrees and, you know, trying to figure out why I won't run. You know, we spent a day figuring that out. So, you know, we keep shooting. If we can stop shooting ourselves in the foot, we'll be way better off. It's coming.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. And that concludes this week's Class Racing Podcast. And as always, you know, feel free to reach out to us, message us,
comment on Facebook, Class Racer. You know, let us know what you think. Let us know if you got any rumors or anything you want us to talk about. We'd definitely like to talk about some stuff that's going on and you know, a little controversial. Charlie likes a little controversy every once in a while.
Yeah, unless you're a sleazebag Democrat, then we don't want to hear from you.
Come on, Charlie. This is a racing podcast. Of course we want to hear from everyone. Everybody have a great week. And that concludes the Class Racing Podcast with Aaron and Chuck. Please make sure to like and follow the Facebook page so that you get all of the latest Class Racing Podcast news. Also, make sure to follow us wherever your podcast source is. And lastly, don't forget to tell your friends.